So today on the program, very special guest. We're pleased to welcome the Lieutenant Governor for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Kim Driscoll is joining us in studio for the first time on this program. Not the first time, though, here at QATV. She's been active here in the Quincy community and here at QATV in the past. We appreciate her coming by this afternoon to speak with us. Great to meet you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, this is a pleasure as well. And hopefully we'll have you back, too, in the future as
Happy to be here. Any excuse to come to Quincy is a good one for me.
We want to talk about, obviously, some statewide issues, but in particular how they impact Quincy. You, being a former mayor yourself, are familiar with municipal issues, certainly, and what mayors face. So I thought we could talk a little bit about concerns at the state level when it comes to the loss of federal funding due to what's happening in Washington and how that translates down to Quincy. What is at jeopardy, I guess, right now when it comes to funding from the federal government for the state of Massachusetts?
Yeah, thanks so much again for having me on.
Sure.
And I'm definitely, local government is my love language as a former mayor. I served alongside Mayor Koch for a number of years as the mayor of Salem. And a gateway city, a historic seaport community, Quincy and Salem have a lot in common. So really no excuse ever to come here, and I'll be back for sure.
Great.
You know, we are concerned about what's coming out of Washington, both direct federal cuts to state resources. To date, we have over $818 million in reductions. That's just since January. And that's everything from FEMA aid, disaster relief to communities, education, health cuts, dollars that communities in the state was relying on. Some of these were pass-through grants that would go to communities. And so it's really disconcerting when you're losing resources, particularly when it can be so unexpected. We know that there are even more cuts to come as we think about the budget that was just adopted and reconciliation, particularly within healthcare, MassHealth, our primary health insurance for your most vulnerable residents, folks who have disabilities, who are not able to necessarily go and be employed. There are serious reductions there as well. And so that is going to cause us to have to, you know, look at, a hard look at what are we able to fund? How do you manage such deep cuts? There's a $400 million gap this year, and there will be further reductions in the federal government. They will really kick in, frankly, for the next fiscal year's budget. So quite concerning when you think about, you know, hunger issues. We have one in three families in Massachusetts who suffer with food insecurities, and we're doing everything we can. We provide free breakfast and lunch to students in schools. We try ably to support our food pantries, and with the Greater Boston Food Bank, Catherine D'Amato and her team really work hard to think about a network of how we deliver food efficiently for families and older adults who are just, with rising grocery prices, just can't make it work to provide the food that they need in their homes. So those are just a snapshot of what we've seen to date, and you know, ways that we think there are going to be impacts that are going to be more long-term as well.
Yeah, is the state prepared to fill in those gaps? Can it fill in those gaps?
You know, there's no way for the state to pull in, you know, millions of dollars, frankly, billions of dollars to replace every lost federal dollar. It's just not possible. We have done, I think, a really good job, thanks to our legislative strength. You know, real shout out to Speaker Mariano, Senate President Spilka, the Ways and Means Chairs, and the legislature in general, who I think wants to obviously work together to offer fiscal prudence. We want to be smart, and we have a healthy rainy day fund with $8 billion in it. But those are meant to be for catastrophic one-time uses.
Pandemics, snowstorms.
Exactly. Yeah. And so some of these are ongoing costs when you're thinking about something like MassHealth and, you know, the impacts that will be felt by losses in Medicaid.
Yes.
That you just can't make up, and many of the other dollars. FEMA. I mean, FEMA is a lifeblood when there are catastrophic events, not only in what they do to bring people to the ground to help with services right away, but also ensuring that you have dollars to pay for some of those disaster costs. FEMA helps provide funding to prevent future future areas. We've got, you know, revetments and old seawalls in places like Scituate that are being redeveloped with FEMA grants. Those things are all in jeopardy, and that's really troublesome, especially when you're an old state. We're in Quincy, celebrating your 400th anniversary.
Yeah.
You know, we've got older infrastructure, and these impacts just seem much greater to us. National Institute for Health and Science Foundation cuts. We lead the nation, $3 billion a year, and they're going for amazing solves for cancer and life-saving drug treatments and therapies every single day. 6,000 clinical trials are happening in Massachusetts aimed at healing, and those have just been really hard hit. So these are areas that aren't just going to impact our economy, although they will. I think they impact our competitiveness, not just as a state, but as a country. So really disconcerting, and we're going to do everything we can to call it out. Obviously, we need to work together, but we're not going to be able to make up every dollar and really answer your question for sure.
Sure. Yeah, talked to a lot of the directors of the social service agencies here in Quincy that are concerned. There's a Mana Community Health Center located here in Quincy as well. The director there is quite concerned about that as well. Do the cuts put the funding for the Sagamore and Bourne Bridges in jeopardy, Lieutenant Governor?
Well, those funding projects are part of some capital projects with the Federal Highway System and the Army Corps, and they are on go. And like the bridges are actually owned by the federal government, as many people know, by the Army Corps. So our hope is they're so far along that it'd be really difficult to pull back on the significant contributions. We have seen curtailment in other mega projects, Alston Multimodal, that was a project in Boston tied to improving some of the turnpike infrastructure, which would free up areas for development. That has been, the reins have been pulled back on that, and numerous other projects across the Commonwealth in terms of reconnecting communities grants, federal grants that had been put out. The bridges are also super, obviously super important and a little bit further from the other projects, and so we're hopeful that that commitment remains strong.
Okay, one thing that is coming though to Quincy is Chapter 90 funding, right?
Yes,
you want to talk about that, and it's exciting because it's doubled.
It really is. Yeah. Chapter 90 funding, for folks who don't know what that is, former mayor, I certainly do.
Sure.
It's the bread and butter for communities and how you fund roadway repairs and maintenance, everything from potholes to whole curb to curb enhancements. It also allows you to purchase equipment to maintain roads. And, you know, 80% of the roads in the state are local roads. Mm-hmm. And we know it's really important to support communities. You need a strong state partner to help with keeping up with infrastructure, particularly outdated infrastructure. And we just doubled the amount of Chapter 90 money, again, working closely with the legislature, Speaker Mariano, and other members of the House and the Senate, to think about ways we could better support communities. And one of the key reasons for that is, like everything else, the cost of asphalt and road repairs are going up. And so if you keep the formula the same, you're just not able to do as many roads.
Right.
And I think we see that in our own neighborhoods, you know, the difficulty of keeping up with the cold in the winter and the freezing in the warmth that creates road repair necessities. And for us, it'll be, you know, significant dollars to Quincy. It's a $300 million commitment statewide. I think it's $3.1 million to the city of Quincy.
Yes.
In terms of dollars that can go directly to roads and sidewalk repairs and equipment for that need. And I know Mayor Koch will be happy about that, and as are we. That's what a partnership's about.
I know it sounds like a lot, I know, but I know it cost almost $2 million just to rebuild one road, Adams Street in Quincy, so it goes quick.
It's really something. Even the smallest, tiniest street in a subdivision or a neighborhood, it's tens of thousands of dollars.
Yes, yeah.
So it does go fast, but this is a larger contribution. I think it's the largest contribution the state's ever made for Chapter 90 dollars. So we hope it will be a meaningful impact, not only here, but across the Commonwealth.
And it's just a grant, right? The city doesn't have to match it.
Straight up grant. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Unrestricted, so it's up to the administration.
It's unrestricted in terms of spending it on roads.
Right.
Like, you know, those are the areas you have to spend it on. There's some linear distances. It's not meant to just fill random potholes, but really sort of think about how you can improve a roadway or corridor. But most cities and towns are grateful to have every penny of it and put it to good use.
Can we talk about a topic I know is near and dear to your heart, and that's affordable housing.
Definitely.
Just last week, actually, the Affordable Housing Act celebrated its one-year anniversary. Right?
It did.
Is it working?
You know, yes. The short answer is yes.
Yeah.
And we also need to do a lot more.
Mm.
So a year ago, we celebrated the signing of the Affordable Homes Act, the Commonwealth's largest investment in housing to date, a $5.2 billion bond bill that also included 49 policy initiatives, things like accessory dwelling units as of right in every community across Massachusetts. It set up commissions and required us to have a statewide housing plan. You know, for years, the state was always pushing communities to have their own housing production plans. We're really valuable. It was our aha moment in Salem. What do your demographics look like? What type of housing do you need? And the reality is, we're all living longer. No community really has enough housing to meet their growth expectations with people living longer and anybody new who might be moving into your community or just growing up and wanting to stay there. We now have one for the state, and it showcased that we're 222,000 units short from what we need, and that's with modest growth.
Mm.
So we've got to do more to produce housing, and the cost of housing is a real issue. That's frankly the number one issue we hear about in every community I'm in, is that it's just too expensive and not available enough. Even in places that housing may be more affordable than the greater Boston area, it's not more affordable to the people who are living there. And so we're really trying to tackle how we build more housing. This is a bit of supply and demand, because we haven't built enough. What we do have, There's high demand for, which makes it more costly. If we can put more housing in communities, we think that can help drive down the cost. The city of Austin built 50,000 units. They saw a real housing struggle. And as a result of building 50,000 housing units in 2 years, they dramatically decreased the growth of housing prices there. Now look, we know there's not a plan to build 50,000 units in any one community.
Right.
The idea is, how do we ask everyone to do their part to build housing and build it smartly? It's not build anything anywhere.
Sure.
Build close to transit. Think about smart growth. Density can be your friend if you're trying to have more customers for coffee shops and taking advantage of the vibrancy of a downtown corridor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Quincy's, frankly, a really good example of a community.
I was just going to ask you, do you think Quincy's meeting that goal?
I think Quincy's been very bullish on housing. I think the mayor understands the value of housing in a place like downtown that can support the restaurants and the coffee shops and retail offerings that are there. It's close to transit. Quincy is blessed with good transit options. And then you also have new growth coming in. Some of these were happening where the growth is happening are old, underutilized, you know, maybe commercial buildings that don't have the same opportunities that they may have had 30 or 40 years ago,
right.
And to see them transformed into maybe retail on the first floor and housing above, you're actually bringing in more tax revenues than you would have as sort of a vacant or underutilized commercial building.
Yep.
And that's great because that new growth can help support the cost of schools and parks and public safety and all the things that you need to do in government.
Yeah, no, part of the law is also to use some state surplus property to convert into housing. Is there a lot of that?
Really excited. I would say we have a fair amount of state-owned parcels. Are they all developable? Are they all in the right place to actually be reutilized? No.
Okay.
But there are a lot. And so while we own a lot, and not every single piece of state land is going to be used right away on a highway, you know, for instance, is not going to be used for housing, there are parcels that we've identified, 36 of them, that are out right now. Available for folks who are interested in putting housing on them. We're working with a lot of our public higher ed partners. So we've got an RFP that just went out for in Bedford, Massachusetts, where Middlesex Community College owns some land that they're not going to use. We've talked with the president of Bridgewater State. There's a commuter rail stop right there on the campus. You know, do you need all that land? Where do you think you might be able to work in partnership to develop some housing? And so many other of our public higher ed institutions, along with leftover vestiges. So we've got 36 parcels of land out right now, 3,500 units potential there.
Okay.
And we're looking forward to getting bids back. Those are out to bid. And there's another tranche that's going out via what we call RFP, or request for proposals.
Yep.
So we can hopefully get a good head start on getting the type of housing we need. And if it's state property, you know, we might be able to develop more affordable housing on those bases as well, because the cost of the land can be a barrier sometimes to building housing that's affordable to people who live in those communities.
Sure. Are there any parcels in Quincy that you're familiar with?
You know, I don't think there's a parcel that I've identified yet. They're still going through it. So I think it'll be on a rolling basis. And we certainly work with the communities as well, because we know there are a number of communities who will themselves say, can we work on that piece of property in concert with the state to get it redeveloped, which is always welcome.
Yeah. You mentioned public transit. As you know, Quincy is a big part of that on the red line for public transit stations, along with bus route. And now a full-time ferry service, at least seasonally.
Yeah.
Is that working, and can it be expanded, do you think?
We're really excited about the opportunities for water transportation. In Salem, we actually had a city-owned ferry that brought people to and from Boston and then also served visitors. And for us, it worked really well, given some of the festivities we have in the fall and, frankly, year-round in Salem. And we see water transportation as a real opportunity. If you think about capital cities that are on the water, a place like New York or Seattle, for instance, there are all kinds of water transportation options to get people in and out of the city. And both of those is just two examples. We think there's more we could do to leverage Boston and the opportunity to get there by water. And we've seen terrific demand of both the Lynn Ferry, which we've added. Quincy and Winthrop were sharing a route. Now, as part of a new grant program we just announced earlier this week, they're going to have their own routes. So you're going to have 10 inbound and 10 outbound runs from Quincy into Boston.
Okay.
We have seen ridership just exponentially grow, especially when we can make it convenient for schedules. And I got to say, if you're going into Boston, there's no better way to get there than a boat. I mean, it is just a beautiful ride.
Yeah.
Well, for sure. And a lot of these can go all the way through the fall.
Oh, sure.
In Salem, we run through till November.
Yep.
And it's just a beautiful way. Hingham and Hull have long had ferry service, and I think anyone who takes it just knows the joy of commuting via boat and not being stuck in congestion. And it really is about finding alternatives to get people using public transit to help free up space on the roads and help be better stewards of our environment.
Sure. Does that also mean more investment, though, in the traditional modes of transportation, subway, bus, commuter rail.
Yeah, you know, we have been fortunate in that we've hired a GM, a general manager for the T in Phil Lang. That was our first hire as a new administration. The governor felt really strongly that we have somebody that brings engineering and transit experience, and we couldn't find a better person than Phil Lang. He came to us from New York. It's the first time in, geez, probably over a decade that we actually have a real transportational professional leading the T, making the investments that we need to make in the short and long term. And the first time in 20 years, we didn't have any slow zones on the MBTA because of just delayed maintenance. And this is when you own a system, when you own the oldest subway system in America, again, benefit of being a historic state, you've got to make the investments in it. And so because of the fair share funding, we've been able to put additional resources into transportation in all modes. That's water transportation, like we were just talking about. That's actually run by the MBTA as well. And subways, commuter rails, and buses. And these have seen meaningful improvements. We have more people riding buses. We've tried to, you know, refine the bus schedule and the bus system. We're moving buses towards electric buses as well, so that they're not doing as much damage to the environment. We know with commuter rail, that's the service that bounced back the most after COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's great to see people using commuter rail. And rather than just have it be the typical 8-to-5 commuter rail, which I think if we go back over the years, that was probably what it was designed to be, it's now more of a regional rail. So that the goal is you can get on a train every 20 minutes, every half an hour, and not quite the subway where you don't need a schedule, but close to it, and meet people where they're at. You're not everyone's just commuting on that, you know, 9-to-5 sort of schedule. And it's really working. We're seeing increases in ridership every single day with people understanding, you know, taking a train. It's particularly the commuter rail. It's a civilized way to travel. You know, you can get to where you need to go reliably, safely, and affordably, which is our overall goal.
Sure. Do you think the fares will have to be adjusted?
I always like to look at fares. It's not inexpensive. Yeah. You know, Salem has the number one commuter rail stop in the MBTA system, highest ridership.
Really?
Where before the lines split, so we get the virtue of two lines coming through. And of course, we have a lot of folks who visit the city as well as commuters, and it's $18 round trip. So plus parking if you're parking, and so we really, you know, are committed to trying to look at. We do have low and moderate income fares for the first time in the MBTA history. They were adopted, so it is there's a means-based process to try and help folks who may not be making as much and give them the option of taking commuter rail. But I think we're always looking for ways to improve it, accessibility and affordability. I'll also say we, you know, started South Coast Rail. It well started in the last administration.
That's right.
Kudos to Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito for putting down the resources to get it going. We had to bring it over the goal line, which we were happy to do. And we have seen just incredible increases in foot traffic to places like the Whaling Museum and other sites in New Bedford and Fall River tied to having that commuter rail access. If you don't have to drive down Route 24, like, why would you? So we're grateful that those sorts of investments really help make the case for why it's important to ensure we're making this safe, accessible, and reliable transit system for all.
I was hoping we'd talk a little bit today about energy affordability. It's been a big issue in the state, as you're well aware, in terms of delivery rates, in terms of the solar subsidy that's happening. Are there things the state is doing now to try and make energy more affordable, and are there things that can happen going forward?
Absolutely. You know, energy demands are growing. I think everything I bought my kids last Christmas plugged into the wall, and we're moving towards e-vehicles, and so many folks are converting their heating systems to heat pumps and things that use more electricity. So we're mindful that when that happens, you have to have more electricity, and we really need it to be more affordable. We're not blessed to have oil reserves or gas reserves, you know, in the state. So we have to import a lot of electricity in.
Right.
That means it costs a little bit more. And then we have an outdated transmission system, if you think about it. You know, as an early state, we've got places that continually need modernization. That requires capital investments. So it's important to us that we really are mindful of how can we drive down some of these costs. It's so integral to what we do, yet it's also an expense that we know can hold people back. We just filed a bill last month, an energy affordability bill aimed at tackling and reducing these costs. Some of it is really taking fees off the bills, well-meaning, well-intended, trying to drive greater efficiencies. We think it can save $10 billion for individuals over the next decade by looking at how we reduce some of the fees that are on bills currently. I think the second thing we're really looking into is how do we develop power where we can, where it makes sense for us. That's why we've been so bullish on offshore wind and solar, two areas that unfortunately Washington is going backwards and pivoting. You know, as a coastal community, the opportunity to have wind, now there isn't, I don't think there are wind leasing sites in Quincy, but there's opportunities for our ports and our economy to utilize wind as a means for economic growth. We know we're already delivering commercial-grade offshore wind energy, offshore wind-generated energy, to 700,000 homes in Massachusetts. We want to do more of that. Wind is the one thing we have. Folks refer to this as the Sahara Desert of, you know, of energy when it comes to offshore wind. Mm. And that's true up and down the East Coast. So our goal is to find more ways to develop clean energy, but most assuredly to make sure it's more affordable. It is key to our economy. It's key to everything that we use as consumers and as families, and we want to try and drive down that cost.
Yeah, I know that the MassSAFE program came under particular scrutiny during this last series of discussions about energy. Does there need to be reform in that program?
We are definitely looking at that. Okay. Everything is on the table. We want to drive down cost. We want to improve efficiencies. And it's fair for us to be looking for accountability. How do we do that? What's the best way to ensure that families, businesses have access to the cheapest power available?
I've been asked to ask you, being a coastal community, as you mentioned, dredging of Quincy Bay is actually important to a lot of the local yacht clubs, but also for industry and the Four River Channel. Is there state funding available for that?
We do have a dredging pool of resources. Yeah. I happen to chair the Seaport Economic Council.
This is why I brought it up with you. Yeah.
And Quincy and Salem and New Bedford and Fall River and Gloucester and a number of coastal communities have received dollars through that fund. Some of it's to assist with dredging. Some of it's to assist with port side improvements. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a number of areas that have working waterfronts, and we have recreational areas.
Right.
They all need support, and we try very hard to be thoughtful of how are we supporting our historic ports. So much of our identity as a Commonwealth, and frankly, for many of our seaports, we're tied to the ocean. And so for us, using those funds to, whether it's to dredge for recreational areas, but importantly to dredge for navigational waterways is really important. And how do we partner with the Army Corps to do that? So there is a pot of money. I know that we're always interested in working at the local level to ensure that we're using those dollars in the most viable way possible.
Sure. Another couple of local issues, if you don't mind.
Of course.
The Quincy District Courthouse complex has been discussed in the past about maybe a total revamp and bringing kind of the Superior Court system here to Quincy as a law center. Are there any updates on that that you can tell us?
You know, the model that the courts have tried to use are like judicial centers, so you're bringing a collection of courts together. And that is, you know, the courts are a separate branch of government. We do work closely with them through the Division of Capital Asset Management to drive the projects. But the courts really define what their needs are.
Okay.
And we've worked closely to ensure that the Quincy Courthouse is currently being renovated downtown and will be named for former Attorney General Bilotti. And I know that there's certainly interest in ensuring that we're consolidating wherever possible.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So it's still a work in progress, it
yes,
sounds like.
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
It hasn't been defined.
Okay, very good. Quincy College, as you know, is a city-owned college, but is there, do you think, a place for Quincy College in the state system?
You know, I think we'd definitely be open to it. The mayor has done such a great job really marshaling what could have been a closed college into keeping it going and serving a population and preparing folks for jobs that we desperately need, whether it's in healthcare or in other STEM fields. I know we've worked closely with him and Speaker Mariano to ensure it's part of our free community college effort for individuals who are seeking associate degrees there. And I think that's another way to support their growth and vitality moving forward. And I think we'd always be open to partnering with the city and finding ways to ensure there's a sustainable model that works.
Okay. 2026 will be Mass 250, right?
Yay.
Yep, 250 years. What's the state planning?
You know, we're so fortunate to have this amazing history in Massachusetts. Mm. I didn't have the good fortune to grow up here. I'm a Navy brat, so I was born in Hawaii. We moved to lots of different places. I came to Massachusetts to go to college, like many people, and just never left. Fell in love with Salem and the amazing history and opportunities that are here. And to be able to celebrating 250 years, I mean, the whole country is celebrating next year, and I feel like in Massachusetts, we actually started 2 years ago with the 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party.
Right.
This year, we had Lexington and Concord, so meaningful. We are all in for next year as we think about celebrating collectively with everybody this major anniversary, along with, we'll have the FIFA World Cup games here. We've got Sail Boston happening. It's going to be a pretty big, we have a re-election happening. It's going to be a pretty big time in 2026.
Yeah.
And given our history and the founding of the country, I think it's going to be really even more special for those of us who live here, certainly visitors who want to come in and see firsthand. You know, the streets that John Adams walked on, you know, are still here. I think there are so many opportunities for communities like Quincy to celebrate that. I know we awarded Quincy a grant to help celebrate the 250th anniversary and the American Revolution history that exists here. And we see that happening, frankly, across the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Every community is trying to tell their story, their revolutionary story. And for us, it's really important given the uncertainties that exist right now and the divisiveness that exists nationally in the country, like, come home, let's think about our history. These were ordinary people, farmers and merchants and laborers who really risked life and limb taking on the greatest military empire known to mankind with the idea of self-governance and fundamental freedoms and democratic principles that didn't exist. It's been a heck of an experiment, not perfect, but it all started here, and I think we're grateful to not only celebrate that history, but make sure we're living up to it here in Massachusetts, too.
You mentioned it's an election year. You're seeking re-election.
Yes, we are.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, I think we're excited. Both Governor Healey and I feel so fortunate to serve alongside her. We're not only the first all-female team to lead the corner office, I think we are committed to really getting stuff done, ensuring that we're lowering costs for residents who live here, driving on issues that have been kicked down the cans, where the can's been kicked down the road, like transportation, like housing. These aren't just new issues. Mm. And then, like, beating our chest on the things we do well. We're number one in education, number one public schools in America, number one innovation economy, number one in healthcare. Just this week, we were named the best state to live in, second year in a row. That doesn't happen by accident. I think it takes real commitment to investing in foundational issues for government and not bearing away from them even when things are tough. I think it takes adult in the room energy governing. We have a good partnership with the legislature. We work hard to tackle challenges and ensure that we're continuing to move forward. This is not a state that rests on its laurels. So we're going to continue to press hard on all of those fronts and make sure that we're standing up for working families, and we're grateful to be in these roles and just looking forward to telling our story and showcasing what we have left to do.
Really appreciate your time, Lieutenant Governor. It's been great to catch up with you, and
thanks, Joe.
We invite you back.
Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
And thanks for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano, and we'll see you next time.